Well, thank you again, Dr. Guy. Some years ago, I took a one-day business trip to Lincoln, Nebraska, that ended up taking 2 days. As the story goes, I had planned to fly to Lincoln in the morning and fly back home that night. I was to fly from Cleveland to Lincoln with about an hour and a half layover in Chicago O'Hare Airport. Now, if you've ever flown to Chicago O'Hare Airport, you'll probably be able to identify a little bit with this. So we left Cleveland, had an hour and a half layover. We left Cleveland about a half hour late. And we got to Chicago and had to wait just a few minutes at the gate to get our gate. Sometimes, you know, they don't have something ready, especially if your flight's a little late. They may have given, you know, the gate to a different plane and that you were originally scheduled for. And I don't know the details of that, but I got off the plane, and of course I checked my connecting flight. And if you know Chicago O'Hare Airport, it's always full of people, and the terminals are rather large and long. And as I recall, we were kind of at one end of the terminal, and I got off and looked at my connecting flight, and it was in a different terminal. And as it turned out, it was kind of at the end of a different terminal. So I began to run. And I ran for the better part of an hour. Again, it's Chicago O'Hare Airport. Now, you know, it's not a 100-yard dash kind of run, but I ran. I finally got to my gate, and they had just closed the door. Now, you know, the plane was sitting there at the gate area, but the door was closed. And I've had this happen a couple times, because Beth and I had this happen a year or so ago when we flew. Once they close the door, they don't reopen it. The plane sat there. There was a plane right there, but I couldn't get on it. The door was closed, and they wouldn't let me in. So once they close the door, now what? You know, now I'm trying to get to Lincoln, Nebraska. Now, I don't know if any of you have ever been to Lincoln, Nebraska. It's a very pretty city, but it's kind of difficult to get to. So they tried to reroute me through some other airlines, and the best they could do for me was 4 o'clock in the afternoon. Now, what can you do at 4 o'clock in the afternoon? You know, can't do business. The day is over at 5. By the time you rent a car and get there, people would have already been home. So, you know, Lincoln's not the easiest place to get to. It's a pretty city. It's about an hour and a half, I think, west of Omaha, Nebraska. It's about 3 hours north and a little bit west of Kansas City, and it just kind of sits there by itself. It's not really like we think of here. You know, here we have Boardman and Austintown, and we have Niles and Girard and Niles to the north that kind of connects us even with Warren. Lincoln, Nebraska is just kind of, excuse me, kind of out there just by itself. So not an easy place to get to. So now what do I do? I'm in Chicago. I was planning to be out there today, back tonight. I have nothing to shave with, toothbrush, no clothes, with the clothes on my back. That's all I have. What do I do? Well, in this case, I had some family in Milwaukee, and I rented a car and did a little business in the Chicago area and drove to Milwaukee, spent the night, washed some clothes, and ended up going to Lincoln, Nebraska the next day. What's the point of the story? The point of the story is all that happened because of one little thing. One little thing caused me to have a one-day event and all the hassle that goes with it become a two-day event. One little thing, and that is my flight left a half hour late. Half hour. The point is, and the title of the message is, Little Things Matter. Little Things Matter. The title of the message today, Little Things Matter. A half hour in the scope of my life is very little time. I looked this up. The average lifespan is what, 73 years? A number of us in here have gotten some nice bonus years already. I'm hoping for that myself. You know, I'm getting up on that seven. I looked at that now, 73. Now, that's not very far away. And, you know, so 73 years is what, 600, and I think I calculated it. I didn't write it down, but it's like 680,000 hours that we live. So a half hour of that is not very much time, is it? It's a little thing. But sometimes little things can make a big difference. I tried to put it into a percentage form and I couldn't. It's got like six zeros in front of it. Not very much time is a half hour in our life, in the overall scope of it. But it can make a big difference in some cases. Can make a big difference. Matthew chapter 25, Christ addressed this principle here in the parable of the talents. Matthew chapter 25 and beginning in verse 14, Matthew 25 and verse 14 says, "For the kingdom of heaven is like a man traveling to a far country," like a man traveling, "who called his own servants and delivered his goods to them," verse 14. Verse 15 says, "And to one he gave 5 talents, to another 2, and to another 1. Again, this is a story that we know, that we've read many times, "to each according to his own ability. And immediately he went on a journey. Then he who had received 5 talents went and traded with them and made another 5 talents. And likewise, he who had received 2 gained 2 more also. But he who had received 1 talent went and dug it in the ground and hid his Lord's money. And after a long time, the Lord of those servants came and settled accounts with them. So he who had received 5 talents came and brought 5 other talents, saying, 'Lord, you delivered to me 5 talents. Look, I've gained 5 more talents beside them.' And his Lord said, 'Well done, good and faithful servant. You were faithful over a few things. We're faithful over a few things. I will make you ruler over many things, enter into the joy of the Lord. And also he who received 2 talents came and said, Lord, you delivered to me 2 talents. Look, I've gained 2 more talents besides them. And his Lord said to him, well done, good and faithful servant. You have been faithful over a few things. I will make you ruler over many things. Enter into the joy of the Lord. And then we see this sad account of this person who had 1 talent, verse 24. Then he who had received 1 talent came and said, Lord, I knew you were a hard man, reaping where you do not sow, where you've not sown, gathering where you've not scattered. I was afraid and went and hid your talent in the ground. Look, there you have what is yours. And we can read the rest of the story there. And again, we know the story, but we see here this principle of being faithful in a few things. Being faithful in a few things. Being faithful in the small things. In the small things. There are many, many small things in our life, aren't there? Many, many, what we would consider in the overall scope of things, the half hour in our life that is a small portion of time, relatively speaking. That half hour in our life that can at times make a big difference and cost us an extra day in travel, in my case, the way that it was. So we can see what happens, you know, if we're not careful in those small things, in those few things, if we continue to read here in verses 24 through 30. Luke chapter 16 will also see this particular principle. In Luke chapter 16 and verse 10, Luke chapter 16 and verse 10. Luke 16 verse 10 says, he who is faithful in what is least, he who is faithful in what is least is faithful also in much. So if we are faithful in the small things, in the little things, in the details, in the little details, God says we'll be faithful in much. He'll be able to give us bigger things. He who is faithful in least is also faithful in much. And he who is unjust in what is least. If we're not faithful in those small matters, those few things, in what is least, Christ said, is unjust also in what is much. Very important principle here. Small things matter, both for the faithful and for the unjust. Small things matter. Little details, little things that we do make a difference. Can make certainly a big difference in our lives and in other people's lives. Small things matter. Let's look at an example of this in the Old Testament. Let's turn back to the book of 1 Samuel chapter 15 here, and we'll look at the example of Saul. 1 Samuel chapter 15, and we'll begin reading in verse 1 and 2. I'm getting a sticky note out because, and you may want to as well, because we're going to move away from 1 Samuel 15 here in a little bit, but then we're going to come back to it. So if you have a 3x5 card or a sticky note, you may want to get that out and put it there so that you can mark 1 Samuel chapter 15. 1 Samuel chapter 15 in verse 1 and 2 says, Samuel also said to Saul, the Lord sent me to anoint you king over his people, over Israel. Now therefore, heed the voice of the words of the Lord. This was really Samuel's first commanded instruction, really, after he became, or Saul rather, I said Samuel, Saul's first real commanded instruction here after he became king. And he, you know, Saul, of course, was, as we know the story, Saul was Israel's first king when they kind of demanded or to have a king. God had other ways that he led them, you know, through the period of the judges. And they wanted a king. And so Saul became their king and did some of those things. And along the way, as we know, some of the kings and what they did, just as God said that that's what they would do. So Saul became their first king. Verse 2 says, thus says the Lord of hosts, I will punish Amalek for what they did to Israel, how he ambushed him on the way when he came up from Egypt. I will punish Amalek, God said. So hold your place there, and we'll look at what they did on their way to Israel when they came out of Egypt. That's what God said here, I will punish Amalek for what they did to Israel, how he ambushed him on the way when they came up from Egypt. So let's go look at that story a little bit and consider it. And when I closed the page, my note blew out of that, so I'll have to figure out how to get back to that. Deuteronomy chapter 25. Let's pick up the story in Deuteronomy chapter 25 and look at what happened here. Deuteronomy chapter 25 and verse 17 and 18. Deuteronomy 25 and verse 17. It says, remember what Amalek did to you on the way as you were coming out of Egypt. Remember what Amalek did. Now remember that we read there in 1 Samuel chapter 15 that, you know, they were to be punished for that. And that was many years later, but we'll get to that in a moment. Remember what Amalek did to you on the way as you were coming out of Egypt, how he met you on the way and attacked your rear flanks, all the stragglers at the rear, when you were tired and weary, and he did not fear God. So he attacked, Amalek attacked the rear flanks of Egypt, of Israel rather, when they were coming out of Egypt. Now, who's at the rear? Who was at the back, at the rear? Well, it says, the word it uses here is stragglers, the defenseless. You know, not the warriors in the camp. The warriors in the camp would have been out front, leading. But here you have stragglers, probably the old. The elderly were at the back, tired and weary, as it says. Or, you know, the women and children at the back, the defenseless were at the back. You know, does this sound familiar to us? Can we visualize this kind of thing happening today where there are attacks on defenseless women, children, young folks? At a party, maybe? Does this sound familiar today? So that's what Amalek did. They attacked the rear flanks where the defenseless were and the stragglers were. Let's turn to Exodus chapter 17. Exodus chapter 17. We'll pick up the story a little bit here in Exodus chapter 17 and verse 14. Exodus chapter 17 and verse 14. It says, "Then the Lord said to Moses, 'Write this for a memorial in the book,' and recounted in the hearing of Joshua, 'that I will utterly blot out the remembrance of Amalek under heaven.'" So what we learn from this, the Moffat translation says there, "Write this down in a book," said the Eternal to Moses, "in commemoration of the day, and read it aloud to Joshua, for I mean to blot Amalek from the very memory of man, of men." So God's intent was for Amalek to be blotted out, to be destroyed. That was God's intent. Now, one of the best explanations I've heard on this was by Mr. David Register. He's our pastor and one of our pastors in California. And he gave a message on it. If you have an opportunity, I think he gave it right after the feast. And some of you have heard it, I know, have listened to it. But one of the best explanations I've heard on this was by him, and he's studied the subject quite a bit. He's been in Israel and a number of times and done some work in that area. But what he said is, God said here, because they attacked you, I'm going to supply a time in the future for you to wipe these people from the face of the earth. That was kind of the intent of what is being said here. I'm going to provide a time in the future when you can wipe these people from the earth. When that time comes, if you don't, as we read in verse 16 says, "For he said, because the Lord has sworn, the Lord will have war with Amalek from generation to generation." From generation to generation. So when that time comes, when it's time to wipe them off the face of the earth, if you don't, you will have war with them from generation to generation. Now, Mr. Register's sermon goes into a lot more detail than I'm going into here, but it was very interesting, I thought, and his purpose was different than mine. But my purpose, of course, is to show us that little things matter. Little things matter. Let's go back to 1 Samuel chapter 15, and then we'll pick up the instruction and see what Saul did and how this all worked out in 1 Samuel chapter 15. So we read verse 1 and 2. "Samuel said to Saul, 'The Lord sent me to anoint you king over the people of over Israel. Now therefore, heed the voice of the words of the Lord. Thus says the Lord of hosts, I will punish Amalek.'" We saw what Amalek did for what he did to Israel. We saw what he did, that he attacked from the rear and took the defenseless, the old, the women and children. Verse 3 says, "Now go attack Amalek and utterly destroy all that they have, and do not spare them, but kill both man, woman, infant, and nursing child, kill both man, woman, infant, and nursing child, ox and sheep, camel and donkey. This time period here is probably somewhere around 350 years after what we read in Deuteronomy. About 350 years later. So God said at that time that I will provide a time for you to do this, to wipe, to utterly destroy, and he gave Saul that job and that responsibility. So Saul gathered the people, it says. Now sometimes people think, or we can look at this and think that it sounds a bit harsh, that God would utterly destroy a people. The Amalekites, Amalek, can sound a bit harsh. You know, there are other places in the Bible where God opened up the ground and swallowed up people. And sometimes, you know, the Bible in some places, I know at one time in Canada, it was listed as a hate book, in part because of some of those things. Dr. Levy, in one of his classes at FI, addressed that. And he mentioned that, you know, sometimes we don't look at things like God looks at things. That we see things on a human level. And when we see, you know, a nation wiped out, or you know, a people wiped out, or people's numbers, great numbers of people swallowed up, you know, we look at it different. God can bring those people back to life in an instant. And so we have to look at it, and God will, when the time is right, bring those people back to life. So we have to look at it like that, and not, because sometimes, again, it can seem a bit harsh, but it's not really. And God has a purpose in everything that he does in that way. Verse 4 then says, so Saul gathered the people together and numbered them in Telaim, 200,000 foot soldiers and 10,000 men of Judah. And Saul came to the city of Amalek and lay in wait in the valley. Then Saul said to the Kenites, go, depart, get down from among the Amalekites, lest I destroy you with them, for you showed kindness to the children of Israel when they came out of Egypt. So the Kenites departed from among the Amalekites. And Saul attacked the Amalekites from Havilah all the way to Shur, which is east of Egypt. Verse 8, so he also took Agag, king of the Amalekites, alive and utterly destroyed all the people with the edge of the sword. But Saul and the people spared Agag and the best of the sheep and oxen and fatlings, the lambs, and all that was good, and were unwilling to utterly destroy them, but everything despised and worthless, that they utterly destroyed. Now, what did God say up in verse 3? He didn't say, keep the king, keep the sheep, keep some of the better things, did he? He said, destroy it, get rid of it all. Get rid of it all. So Saul did not do as he was instructed, did he? Saul did not do as he was instructed. Verse 10 through 13, verse 10 says, now the word of the Lord came to Samuel saying, I greatly regret that I have set up Saul as king, for he has turned back from following me and has not performed my commandments. And it grieved Samuel, and he cried out to the Lord all night. verse 12 says, "So when Samuel rose early in the morning to meet Saul, it was told Samuel, saying, Saul went to Carmel, and indeed he set up a monument for himself, and he has gone on around, passed by, and gone down to Gilgal. And Samuel went to Saul and said to him, Blessed. And Saul said to him, Blessed are you of the Lord. I have performed the commandment of the Lord." But the answer is partially. Partially. Not all of it. Forgot some small details. Some small matters that you did not do. That you did not perform. Verse 14 says, "But Samuel said, What then is this bleating of the sheep in my ears and the lowing of the oxen which I hear? If you did what you were told to do, what is that about?" And Saul said, "They have brought them from the Amalekites, for the people, not me, wasn't me, it was the people, spared the best of the sheep and oxen to sacrifice to the Lord your God, and the rest we have utterly destroyed." Then Samuel said to Saul, verse 16, "Be quiet. I will tell you what the Lord said to me last night." And he said, "Speak on." So Samuel said, "When you were little in your own eyes, were you not the head of the tribes of Israel? And did not the Lord anoint you king over Israel? Now the Lord sent you on a mission and said, Go, utterly destroy the sinners, the Amalekites, and fight against them until they are consumed. Why then did you not obey the voice of the Lord? Why did you swoop down on the spoil and do evil in the sight of the Lord? Why? Why did you do that?" Small things can make a big difference, can't they? Small things make a big difference. You know, back in verse 20, or up forward to verse 20, I should say, "Then Saul said to Samuel, But I have obeyed the voice of the Lord and gone on a mission on which the Lord sent me and brought back Agag, king of Amalek. I have utterly destroyed the Amalekites." Did that happen? Did he? Well, obviously he had Agag there. He did not do what God had told him in verse 3 to destroy ox and women, children, ox, sheep, camel, and donkey. Destroy everything. He didn't accomplish that, did he? Saul obviously didn't utterly destroy the Amalekites. Verse 2 Samuel chapter 1. We'll go forward to 2 Samuel chapter 1 and verse 1. 2 Samuel chapter 1 and verse 1. This again goes forward 40 years. 40 years. Now, in verse 20 of chapter 15 of 1 Samuel 15, Saul said, "I have utterly destroyed the Amalekites." But here we see 40 years later, "Now it came to pass after the death of Saul, when David had returned from the slaughter of the Amalekites." 40 years later, there were still Amalekites. 40 years later. Verse 8, and again we know how the story goes, how in the first chapter here of 2 Samuel, where this young man came who had killed or helped to finish off Saul. We can read the story there as we go through. For time's sake, I won't read it, but we can read the story as we go through this. We can see that this young man in verse 8 says, "And he said to me, 'Who are you?' So I answered him, 'I am an Amalekite.'" I am an Amalekite. And this again was 40 years later. So obviously, you know, there were more than Agag left back here in when Saul was commissioned to do what God said there would be a time to do in Deuteronomy, that there would be a time to do that in Exodus. Saul was commissioned with that. Obviously, there were more than Agag left. There were other Amalekites, and Saul didn't get the job done. And so it was a small thing, really, the overall scope of human history. But, you know, the spirit of the Amalekite lives today, doesn't it? It lives today. So we need to recognize the importance of small things. Let's shift gears for the next few minutes in the balance of the message today. Shift gears a little bit and consider how small things matter can apply to us, can apply to you and I. Just look at a few things, a few examples as we go through the rest of the message today. Let's turn to Genesis chapter 1. Back to the book of Genesis chapter 1. Pick up, we know the Genesis chapter 1 being a creation chapter. Genesis chapter 1, and we'll pick up the story in verse 24. Says, "Then God said, 'Let the earth bring forth living creatures according to its kind, cattle and creeping things and beasts of the earth, each according to its kind.' And so it was." And so it was. So God made, as it says, the cattle and the creeping things and the beasts of the earth, and each after its kind. Verse 26 then God says, "Let us make man in our image. Let us make man in our image, according to our likeness. Let them have dominion over the fish of the sea and over the birds of the air and over the cattle, over all of the earth and over every creeping thing that creeps on the earth." I want to focus here specifically on the fact that God made man different than the beasts, didn't he? Of course, we understand in 1 Corinthians that man has the spirit in man that allows us to do the things differently than the beasts. But here in verse 26, it says that we have dominion. You and I can exercise dominion. Now, dominion, defined in dictionary.com as the power or right of governing and controlling, or to rule or to control. Webster adds, it's the power to rule or ownership. The power to rule or ownership. God has given us dominion. He's given us dominion. He's given us the ability to rule, to control the things that we do. He's given us that ability, the power to rule or to control what you and I do. So We can rule ourselves. We have authority over every minute of the day in terms of our lives. One of the things, I think Mr. Armstrong used to say this, one of the things that he's given us all equally is 24 hours in the day. It's a matter of how we use it. But we have authority over every minute of the day. Let's turn to Colossians chapter 1, back to the New Testament in Colossians chapter 1 and verse 16. Colossians chapter 1 and verse 16. Says, for by him all things were created that are in heaven and that are on the earth. And we just read about that in Genesis chapter 1. Verse 24 talked about the beasts and the cattle, and verse 26 of chapter 1 talked about creating man. So God, it says, for by him were all things created that are on earth, visible and invisible. Visible and invisible, whether thrones or dominions or principalities or powers, all things were created by him. Visible and invisible. We can observe and see the visible, can't we? We can see the visible. You know, we especially see it this time of year. It's all lit up. We can't miss it sometimes. You know, the houses in our neighborhoods, we see all that. What about the invisible? What about the invisible? Do we have dominion, control, rule, ownership of our thoughts? We can see the visible. What about the invisible? Do we have, again, dominion, control, ownership of our thoughts? Mr. Courtney talked a little bit about that in the sermonette. Do we? You know, in 1 Corinthians chapter 10 and verse 5, you don't need to turn there, but Paul briefly, you know, said, bring every thought into captivity to the obedience of Christ. Every thought. Now, I always think of there that as you read through the Bible, there are certain commands, instructions that are challenge scriptures. And I always think 2 Corinthians 10:5 is a challenge scripture to bring every thought into captivity. That can be challenging at times, to bring every thought. But we have dominion, don't we? We have rule, we have control. We're to have dominion even over our thoughts. Faithful in a few things. You know, small things matter, don't they? Small things matter. Let's consider the Ten Commandments in this regard as we think about small things mattering, as we think about exercising dominion, authority over our thoughts, and control over our thoughts. Been focusing, I know last time that I spoke, or maybe last week, we went over some, or maybe a couple times ago, that we went over some of the Ten Commandments as well. But one of the reasons is I've been focusing on and thinking about some of those things myself, and frankly, sometimes when I speak, and I can't speak for the other speakers here, but when I speak, oftentimes it becomes speaking on some subject that I've been studying on, and something comes to mind, and I think, well, I should prepare a sermon on that. And so, again, I've been focusing on and thinking about some of those things lately. But, you know, are there things we put ahead of God? You know, are there things, small things matter? In the small things, a few things matter. Are there things we put ahead of God? And here's a question I ask myself at times, and I do ask myself this once in a while. I think I might have mentioned this before. Does God get my best time of the day, or does he get my leftover time of the day? Sometimes, you know, in the busyness of our day, sometimes God can get the end of the day. Or, you know, if we have time, some time to work in a little prayer or Bible study, does he get the best of us each day? Or do we make that effort to make sure that God gets the best of us each day? Just a question that we can ask ourselves. You know, you shall not make for yourself any carved image. Most modern translators use the word idols. Idols. Now, you know, we don't carry a cross, do we? We don't have a nativity scene in front of our house. I don't think we do. Any of us. I doubt that. We see those things. Again, that's the visible. We see that, don't we? But we don't have it. But in a small things matter sense, do we idolize something or someone? Do we idolize something? That would be idolatry, something or someone. 1 Chronicles chapter 16. 1 Chronicles chapter 16 and verse 25. Helpful scripture here, and I think a quote from David. 1 Chronicles chapter 16. Verse 25 says, "For the Lord is great, and greatly to be praised, and he is also feared above all the gods." Verse 26 says, "For all the gods of the peoples are idols." All the gods of the peoples are idols. If you look in my center margin there, it says, worthless things. Worthless things. All the gods of the people are worthless things, are idols. But the Lord made the heavens. So we are to worship God, aren't we? And do what God says. So we have to be careful. Again, a little thing. Something for us to think about. Do we take God's name in vain? Do we take God's name in vain? In small ways. In small ways. Use words like gosh or golly. We've probably heard that one. Or geez. Those are what we call euphemisms. Sometime maybe we'll give a message on or a sermonette on euphemisms and some of the words that are, it's a word used instead of. Gosh is a word used instead of God. You know, OMG is used in social media terms. Now, it, you know, we know that it means, oh my God. That's using God's name in vain. Do we get caught up in that? I don't think we do, but you know, it's just a question that we can ask ourselves. Do we get caught up in that? Are we careful in our lives and in the things that we say and in the things that we project to not use God's name in vain? In small ways. Again, even maybe in thought processes. How about the fourth commandment? Remember the Sabbath to keep it holy. You know, what does keeping the Sabbath holy mean to us? You know, God made the Sabbath holy, didn't he? We are to keep it holy. God made it holy. We're to keep it holy. There are any number of small things we can do to keep the Sabbath holy. Any number of small things. Leviticus, let's look at a couple of scriptures here. Leviticus chapter 23. Now we know Leviticus chapter 23 as the kind of the holy day chapter. Leviticus 23 and verse 1. Leviticus 23 and verse 1 says, "The Lord spoke to Moses, saying, Speak to the children of Israel, and say to them, The feasts of the Lord, which you shall proclaim to be holy convocations, these are my feasts, which is the first feast mentioned. 6 days shall work be done, but on the seventh day is a Sabbath of solemn rest, a holy convocation." That is a public assembly, a holy public assembly. "You shall do no work on it. It is the Sabbath of the Lord in all your dwellings." So we're to keep God's Sabbath holy, and we're to assemble before him. Hebrews chapter 10. And we do this. This is what we do. That's why we're here today, assembled on God's Sabbath day. Hebrews chapter 10. Hebrews chapter 10 and verse 23 through 25. Hebrews chapter 10 and verse 23 says, "Let us hold fast the confession of our hope without wavering, for he who promised is faithful." God is faithful. We're trying to learn to be faithful in a few things. In little things, in small things. God is faithful for what he has promised. "Let us consider one another in order to stir up love and good works, not forsaking the assembling of ourselves together, as the manner of some is, but exhorting one another, and so much more as you see the day approaching." You know, now, we're always asked not to come to services when we're sick. We don't do that, do we? But, you know, when possible, we need to make, you know, regular attendance a priority. And we do, don't we? We do that. We make regular church attendance a priority. It's important to us. Now, there are 6 more commandments that I could go into, but I'm going to stop there. The other 6, you know, but I'll suggest to us that we evaluate the commandments, the first 4 that we've already gone through, in other ways, and the other 6 that we didn't talk about, in light of small things matter. Being faithful in a few things. Being faithful in a few things. Think about the 6th and 7th commandment, for instance, in light of Matthew 5 and the spirit of the law. Think about it in terms of that. So, brethren, small things, individual pieces in our lives, that half hour matters, doesn't it? It can make a big difference. Let's be aware that in life, small things matter.